Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org Reality Cast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode of Reality Cast, I'll be interviewing advice columnist Harris O'Malley about getting nerds laid. The rest is about politics, people. The election is coming in a couple of months, and the attention being paid in the campaign season to reproductive rights is unusually intense, and I will be here to cover it all. The Todd Akin legitimate rape comment sparked a bazillion online parodies, but for my money, the renegade raging grannies are the clear winners.
Our female bodies are clever that way. We only get pregnant when we say okay. Doctors have told him.
And here, I've been told that my generation was the one that invented feminism by way of cursing a lot. Clearly not. The seeming result of the Todd Akin blow-up in August is that this means any hopes that the Republicans had of keeping women's issues from being central to the election discourse have been dashed. Not that the Akin thing was the only factor. The Obama campaign clearly wants to make reproductive health a central issue in the campaign, so they were going to put it on the table no matter what. But Republicans running for office had a choice in how to react to that. The logical choice, if they wanted the war on women narrative to go away, would be to elevate more centrist members of the party, stop resisting things like the contraception mandate, and tell the anti-choice fanatics in the party to slow their roll. The other option is to issue half-hearted denials of misogyny while mounting an incredible attack on women's rights, and hope people take you at your word instead of your deeds. Or sometimes your other words. This appears to be the strategy that's been chosen by the Romney campaign and the larger Republican Party. For instance, Romney's VP pick, Paul Ryan, is known for not only being an absolutist on the abortion issue, but his long history of trying to reduce access to contraception and of speaking about these issues in tone-deaf ways that make it clear that he keeps forgetting that women are people.
Specifically where you stand, when it comes to rape and when it comes to the issue of should it be legal for a woman to be able to get an abortion if she's...
Yeah, well, so I'm very proud of my pro-life record, and I've always adopted the idea, the position that the method of conception doesn't change the definition of life.
As I've noted before on this show, rape exceptions are nonsense, but that doesn't really excuse Ryan minimizing a violent crime that can cause injury, trauma, infection, and if you get HIV, death. Method of conception. It's frustrating because this kind of dehumanizing language is what really gets a lot of interest going, in part because on shows like this you can quote them directly. Needless to say, Ryan's policies back up this view of women as mere instruments instead of people who matter. He supported legislation that would give fertilized eggs more rights to a woman's body than she has. Ryan tries to distance himself from Akin in this interview, but they agree on the primary issue, which is that a fertilized egg, and in many cases, sperm, deserve more consideration than full-grown women. Republicans know they have a gender problem, but their continued attempts to deal with it just keep falling apart. For instance, Bob McDonnell, who came up in the party because he's so firmly anti-woman, tried to deny that the GOP's platform, which basically calls for an amendment giving the quote-unquote unborn more rights than women to women's bodies, would have any implications for abortion exceptions in the case of rape or incest.
Well, the party didn't make any judgment on that. It's a general proposition to say we support human life. The rest of those details are up to the states and the people, respectively, Georgia, and that's simply not covered. It's something up to Congress and the states. We have laws in Virginia that have some of those exceptions. But at this point, with the U.S. Supreme Court having its say, these are not issues that are even material at this point.
There's no way around that. He's lying. The notion that a so-called human life amendment to the Constitution could somehow give states the space to carve out exceptions for rape is silly. Maybe for a couple of weeks, until someone sues, but if it's in the Constitution, the Supreme Court can basically force states to ban abortion. Indeed, that's the intention behind amending the Constitution. A constitutional amendment is about putting this issue out of the court's hands. That's why they want it. The sense that Republicans resent reproductive health care, like contraception and abortion, isn't doing much to help the case, especially with female voters. That their opposition to the Affordable Care Act shouldn't be mistaken for opposition to increasing access to health care generally. In an effort to assure voters that he does care about the un- or underinsured, Romney released this ad.
Well, first of all, with regards to women's health care, look, I'm the guy that was able to get health care for all of the women and men in my state. They're just talking about it at the federal level. We actually did something, and we did it without cutting Medicare and without raising taxes.
Yep, they did. By passing nearly the same bill in Massachusetts that Obama signed on the federal level. He's not technically lying when he says that they did it without cutting Medicare, but he's implying that Obamacare does cut Medicare, which it does not do. They are nearly the same legislation. In fact, one of the few differences is, wait for it, RomneyCare covers abortion and Obamacare has all these restrictions eliminating abortion coverage. I sincerely don't know what the Republicans are trying to pull this election, but I don't think it's going to work. I'd like to welcome Harris O'Malley to the program. Harris runs a great blog called Paging Dr. Nerdlove, which you can find at drnerdlove.com. He describes his website as for giving advice to nerds and geeks from his little corner of the internet, making geeks a little more sexy and women a little bit more nerd curious. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Harris.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I really love being on here.
So how did you come around to deciding to run an advice site to help nerds and geeks specifically improve their dating skills?
It came about in a really kind of oblique manner. I was on a podcast called The League of Extremely Ordinary Gentlemen, and we're part of a movie review website called Spill.com. And we usually do episodes based around movies that had just come out. And we had had an episode based around Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And so we decided to make it the League of Extremely Ordinary Gentlemen versus Love and encouraged our readers to send in their, you know, stories about their evil exes. And we got a lot of relationship questions. And at the time, I was seen on the League as being kind of the man about town. I was spending a lot of time downtown getting a lot of dates. So I ended up fielding a lot of those questions, and they kind of gave me the nickname of Dr. Nerdlove. And we had a lot of questions that we never got around to answering. So I put up a post on Vimeo answering some of them, and that turned into a thread on Spill, which then eventually I thought, you know what, I need to do this for myself, and created the Dr. Nerdlove website.
So a lot of people coming to you for advice, you've kind of targeted the same demographic that's being targeted by the so-called pickup artists. And you're really doing something different, however, than a lot of the pickup artists. Can you kind of explain how your approach differs?
Well, I have gone over a lot of the pickup artist material. I've even been in the community for a little while, but ended up getting out of it because I thought a lot of the attitudes I was encountering were really toxic. And just kind of realized that there's just not that many resources for men who want to get better. And we tend to have two extremes. Either we have the works of, you know, movie directors like Ben Hughes teaching guys, hey, be a nice guy. Or we've got Mystery who say, you know, have all these routines memorized and be an incredibly manipulative person. And my approach is more along the lines of what you really need to do is learn how to be a more interesting and charismatic person, and just being better able to express who you are and what you're into in an attractive manner. Too many people see being a nerd as being a negative, when in reality there are lots of people who love nerds, who want to share the passion that nerds have for their favorite things. And so it was mostly a matter of teaching guys, all right, here's things that a lot of nerds do that you could work on, you know, simple behavioral stuff. Here's a lot of mental attitudes that you tend to have that you can overcome. Here's some exercises to help overcome it. And some practical things like, here's how clothes are supposed to fit. Here's how, you know, here's where to go finding clothes. Here's how do you get the haircut that looks good. So just really little things that add up to a more attractive package.
And you started off like aiming this site at men, but now it seems you have a lot of female readers. Like, how have you adjusted to that?
Well, originally I started off aiming at men because, like I said, it seemed to me, and still does to a certain extent, that there are more resources out there for women than there are for men. Women are more encouraged to talk with other women and share information about how to get better at making themselves more attractive or how to find and meet and be charming to a man. Whereas with men, there doesn't seem to be much. But the more that I was out there and started getting my name out, the more that I was getting letters from women, too, who were having a lot of the same issues. And then eventually I wrote an article about male privilege in nerd culture and why it's holding men back, especially the attitudes that we tend to encounter. And then I really came to attention to a lot of women and started getting a lot of women writing in and realized, you know, I've got advice that applies equally to both sexes and I might as well aim it at both people.
So speaking a little bit about the nerds and male privilege thing, I thought that was interesting. It seems like it was a turning point article for you. Like when you first started writing the blog, it seemed to be just like dating tips, like you said. And then you wrote about how male privilege kind of trips men up. And now you've been writing, not all the time. It's not even like the bulk of your stuff, but you write pretty frequently about things like male privilege and sexual harassment. Why did you decide to sort of put a focus on these issues?
Because I think men really need to learn that these are issues facing women. And if it, coming at it from the attitude of if you realize that these are things affecting women, it'll make you better at dating is a way of getting the message across. Okay, sure.
Do you think that it's like, it's not, you're not just trying to subterfuge them though, right? You're not trying to like make them better by dangling dating out as a carrot.
No, it's really just a case of, I want them to be better people and realizing, because sometimes you get people who are genuinely malicious. But on the other hand, you got people who are just well-meaning, but a little thoughtless. And those are the people who I really kind of want to make realize, like, hey, the things that I'm doing are bad. I never realized that before. And make them better people by becoming more considerate, more thoughtful, and less of an asshole.
Do you think that your approach has been getting through to some of your readers that had those issues?
I think so. I've heard back from a lot of people who've realized that, oh, hey, I didn't realize that this was happening. I didn't realize that when I said X, it was coming across as Y. And that really kind of makes me feel better, especially whenever I post something and then I immediately get a lot of guys getting defensive saying, no, wait, that's not right. You know, women shouldn't be that sensitive. Why can't they get a sense of humor? And then I kind of pound my head against the desk.
Yes, women are just lacking a sense of humor in math.
Exactly.
So what do you think are some of the most common problems that you see holding nerdy guys back from kind of getting the dating and sex life that they want?
Ultimately, I think it comes down to two things. I think it comes down to a lack of confidence in themselves and a really misguided idea of what does it mean to be a man? I think a lot of pop culture teaches us that men are boorish or that they're kind of stupid and sex crazed. But at the same time, we're all supposed to be, you know, we're supposed to be these crazy sex crazed animals who want nothing more than beer and titties. And at the same time, intellectualism and passion for things is to be frowned upon, which is part of the reason why nerds sometimes get short shrift by other people, because, hey, they're celebrating intellect and passion, and that's just not manly.
That's funny. I think women face some of those stereotypes, too. It just kind of comes off a little differently.
Yeah. I think if we really kind of analyzed the way that men and women are treated and marketed to these days, we'd find there's a lot more similarities than we'd ever give them credit for.
So I think you're right that a lot of nerdy guys kind of grow up with this, like, only jock men are sexy, only, like, boars are real men, all this. But do you think that this concept of geek chic that people are trotting out has changed things at all? Do you think that things are getting better?
I do think things are getting better. I think that geek chic isn't necessarily it. I think that it's interesting. What we call hipster now was basically Steve Earle in the 90s. So it's kind of interesting seeing that become sort of a fashion thing, whereas a lot of nerds these days are dressing like a Hot Topic exploded all over them. So if you look at a nerd now, you're basically seeing a metalhead from the 80s. But I think what's really helping has been the things that have been... geek culture has become pop culture, basically. I mean, the top grossing movies of all time in the U.S. are Harry Potter, Star Wars, the Batman movies, and Pirates of the Caribbean. Doctor Who has made a comeback in no small part because of American audiences. We've got all these, comic books are becoming a big thing. They're becoming culturally into their own. They're no longer just something that only nerds and geeks and the social misfits read. They're becoming a fully accepted art form in and of themselves. And I think that's been really helping. And also shows like Lost, where even people like, who are not the stereotypical geeks are really diving into the minutiae and finding their brethren online talking about all these things they've noticed. I think all of that has really been kind of moving the needle a little bit and away from the only jocks rule everything.
You know, Ned, this is a little bit off topic for my show, but I still have to toss that out there because I'm curious about this. Since I agree with you, you're seeing geek culture is mainstream culture. So, like, what does it even really mean anymore to be like a geek or a nerd?
Ultimately, it's about really just having a lot of having passion that you're not embarrassed about, a lot of passion that you don't really feel the need to rationalize or validate by saying, oh, I'm into this because it's cool. It's like, no, I'm into it because it's awesome. I don't care what other people think. I think being the great part about being a nerd or a geek is being willing to be almost kind of childlike in your appreciation of the things you like. You don't really worry about what other people think. I mean, even I, at times, have made fun of the bronies, the men who are into My Little Pony Friend is Magic. But you can't really blame them for having this almost, fuck you, I don't care what the world thinks, I love this anyway attitude towards the show. And in a lot of ways, that's really kind of inspiring.
Yeah, I think that's thanks. I've needed somebody to sort of define it as things change so rapidly. I think that's a good definition. My guest today has been Harris O'Malley. You can find his blog at Dr. spelled out, just like Doctor Who, nerdlove.com. He's also starting a podcast with the same name, Paging Dr. Nerdlove. So check that out, too. I was a recent guest. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast.
Thanks for having me.
Since Republicans have determined that they can't rein in the rabidly misogynist elements, call off the attacks on contraception access, or get Paul Ryan to utter the word woman out loud, what are they doing in order to counteract the Democratic claim that Republicans are waging a war on women? Well, the strategy that seems to be emerging is just keep on doing their thing while waving their hands a lot and denying basic realities. For instance, we're beginning to see some of the I'm rubber, you're glue arguments coming out, which is what Mary Madeline decided to try on ABC.
No, it may. You know why I'm shaking my head? Because the Democratic gender gap with men is as great as the gender gap with women.
And but after you want to peel off, but you'd like Greta, to peel off some more.
No,
you don't want to
after
push
a sustained
over.
War on women that Romney, everything from a dog abuser to a wife cancer giver to a felon to a tax cheat, multi-million dollars, multi-faceted, multi-state, the gender gap has remained stable, and as has Obama's with men. We're doing fine with women. What's driving the gender gap for Obama, excuse me, one second, is liberal women, women under 30,
mostly unmarried,
and postgraduate women.
I'm not sure what her point really is with this. Single women, liberals, and women under 30, their votes spend as good as anyone else's vote. As for the, well, there's a gender gap going the other way thing, to the extent that it's true, it's not as big a deal. The reason that women's vote is a thing is because women vote more than men, to such a degree that it ends up being millions of votes total. So Madeline's assumption that it all evens out doesn't really play. Jeb Bush is a little bit more honest in acknowledging the issues here, but still can't admit that it's a deep problem that can't be fixed with a few pink banners.
I'm concerned about it over the long haul, for sure. Our demographics are changing, and we have to change not necessarily our core beliefs, but how we, the tone of our message and the message and the intensity of it, for sure.
To an extent, he's not wrong that one can actually get away with, say, believing that female sexuality is a sin that should be punished with forced childbirth. They have gotten away with that in the past, precisely by monitoring language and never stating those views directly. Or at least not to the larger public, but keeping it within conservative circles. But as this last election shows, that strategy is untenable. Eventually, you get enough of your policy goals passed that people start to notice, which is what is happening with the attacks on abortion rights and contraception access. The other thing that happens, and I think we're seeing that now, is that if you start recruiting a base that's motivated by rock-solid misogyny, eventually they grow and start taking leadership positions instead of just always being foot soldiers. That's really what this Tea Party thing is about. All the people who've been pulled into politics through the over-the-top talk radio and Bible thumping about abortion have amassed some power and are calling the shots now. And they don't see the point of speaking in code, not when they can make the direct misogynist arguments that brought them into the fold. I think that's the direction this is headed. The other problem is that if you sincerely have sexist beliefs, it can be hard to get into the heads of people who aren't sexist so that you can talk in ways that a non-sexist person might talk. Thus, tripping up is a common problem, as happened with Republican Tom Smith, who is challenging Senator Bob Casey of Pennsylvania.
Well, how would you tell a daughter or a granddaughter that, who, God forbid, would be the victim of a rape to keep the child against her own will? Is that something that you would, I mean, do you have a way to explain that?
I lived something similar to that with my own family. She chose life, and I commend her for that. She knew my views, but fortunately for me, I didn't have to. She chose the way I thought. Don't get me wrong, I wasn't raped, but she did.
Similar how?
Having a baby out of wedlock.
That's similar to rape?
No. But put yourself in a father's position, yes. I mean, it is similar. This isn't.
Notice also how close he got to saying he was lucky he didn't have to, what? Force her? With whose army? Anyway, the rest of it is the sort of thing that's just no good. He basically said that single motherhood is the same as rape, and when given a chance to clarify, he just said, from the father's perspective. I'm not entirely sure what that even means, but the closest I can get is that, hey, either way, the father doesn't get to move that woman into his house and have her on hand to clean up after him as well as the baby. All of which is a long way of saying that if you're trying to shake off the image of sexism, the easiest way to do it is to not be sexist. Why that option seems off the table is up for listeners to decide. And now for the wisdom of Wingnuts. Please stop insinuating you don't use birth control, ladies of Fox News edition. I mean, I don't want to be presumptuous, but snottily implying that birth control is only a certain option for certain women, humph, humph, has become a daily thing on Fox, like Megyn Kelly here.
Better feel for what we're going to see at the Democratic National Convention, and we're going to have Miss Fluke, who, I guess posits herself as an advocate for women, but only women who hold certain views.
Not true in the slightest. Your insurance will cover your contraception without copay, whether or not you agree with Sandra Fluck. The only way that swipe makes sense is if you're implying that conservative women don't use contraception. But they do. It's statistically impossible for them not to. And I'm sick of the near-daily insinuations on Fox that it's only something other women do. She also claimed that the government is paying for free contraception. That is also a lie. Insurance companies are required to offer it with no copay. That's very different.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for a weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening and see you next week.